brought to you by Black Knight. It's the technology.ie podcast, episode 26 for April 27th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinicon. Hello and welcome to technology.ie, the podcast on the website technology.ie. This is Conor Muinicon in the Edgecast Media Studio. We go live to Black Knight's offices in Carlow for Michaela Nealon. Hi, Michaela.
Good afternoon, Con. How are you?
Very good. And our special guest this week from New York, is it Patrick? Am I right?
Well, I was born in New York, but I live in Florida.
Oh, Eastern time, but much nicer than New York, I imagine, this time of year.
Oh, it's beautiful right about now. It's sunny outside. I'm looking out at my pool thinking I'm going to jump in after this conversation.
Let's introduce you formally, Patrick. It's Patrick Rudell, also known as Chef Patrick, especially in the Domainer community. Are you really a chef, Patrick?
Not at all. I don't really know how to cook. My wife handles all the cooking in the house.
Where did you get the name?
You know, it's just catchy. It's what's cooking in the domain world. And, you know, every kitchen needs a chef. And I figured I'd be the chef of the domain kitchen world.
Well, we're going to talk to you more about that later. And also about the site you run, sciencefiction.com, which is a great domain to have. And you're making very good use of it there as well. We'll talk about that as well. Lots of other stuff to talk about on the show this week. Let's get straight into it. First of all, Google Drive is kind of in the news this week. Woke up, I think, on Wednesday morning and discovered that my Android phone was telling me to update my Google Docs app. And Google Docs has turned into Google Drive, so I refreshed that. It's now called my Google Drive app, but that's as much as I know about it. Nobody I know seems to have got a chance to use it yet, Michele.
Yeah, I've seen people talking about it, but I mean, I haven't been able to sign up. When I go to sign up, it's saying, you know, it's not ready yet. Yeah. So I can't even test it and criticize it properly.
I've tried various Google IDs that I have of an ordinary, simple one, a domain one and everything, and it just says, not ready yet. What about you, Patrick? Have you tried it?
I haven't. I've been a little bit behind the technological curve here. I think just focusing on my businesses and not trying to worry about what the future of technology is.
And are you interested in it in any way, or is that, does it matter? Is it just, do you use any kind of cloud storage service or anything like that at the moment?
I don't, and this is going to sound silly, but the older I get, the less I care about technology. And I'm sorry to say that because I know this is technology.ie, but the older I get, the less patience I have for technology.
That's it. We're done. So we can just leave it at that. So for this week, Michele, what do you think?
Well, no, but he's right. I mean, I'm the same. I mean, a couple of years ago, I was quite happy, you know, running crazy configurations, dual booting into between Linux and Windows, and faffing about on the command line and doing all sorts of funky things. And I got bored with it all. I got myself a Mac and just all those problems went away.
That's something I meant to say to you, really. Yeah, I mean, you're a Mac user, and a lot of people involved in technologies are Mac users. And in many ways, once you start using a Mac, once you put yourself in the hands of Apple, you're saying, I don't want to worry about the details of tech. I just want stuff that works.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, but when, for me, that's the way I view it.
That's a worthy ambition, in fairness.
I agree here, too. Definitely.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with it in favor. Having said all that, I'm interested in the details as much as it impacts what we do from day to day and trying to get around and be mobile and stuff like that. Certainly, as I think I said this to you as well before, Michele, when you're working with, when we work with media files, with audio and video, it's very useful to have someplace that you can dump stuff for people and it'll show up later. Used to use box.net, been using Dropbox recently. I think you're a Dropbox user as well, are you, Michele, or...?
Yeah, no, I use Dropbox because it's handy for, I mean, the thing which actually causes me the most grief are large graphics files.
Yeah.
Like, say, James, our designer, might share a bunch of graphics with me, and if some of them are pretty high res, it's a pain in the neck. I mean, how else, moving them around via email is not a good idea.
Yeah.
Uploading them and downloading them and everything else, it just gets messy, and then you lose them because you have them on the desktop of one machine but you don't have them on another, and you can't remember the link to the damn file. So yeah, it works pretty well for that.
I used to have a paid account with box.net, and then I stopped using it because you always, especially when you have your own storage or you have a server or something like that, you very often think, oh, you know, this could be you know, this I don't really need this stuff. And I remember cancelling the box.net account at one point. But using Dropbox recently and using the app for it, or the installed application, so it creates a folder for you and on your desktop, I'm finding that really, really useful at the moment. I presume it's something similar with Google Drive. They've basically, sensibly enough, I think, integrated Google Docs into it. So if you're using Google Docs, such as we do, for example, when we're preparing this program, that's now a part of it. But it remains to be seen exactly what that is going to.
What is Google Drive going to be? And like I said, I'm a little behind. So it's basically going to be like the iCloud for Apple. It's just going to, you can merge everything together through Google Drive?
Yeah, essentially, as far as I can see, it's going to be like iCloud, it's going to be like Microsoft SkyDrive or Dropbox. They're all similar in many ways. And it's one of the interesting things, actually, and I'm going to put a link into a comparison done on Engadget.com. Google is not the cheapest in this, and they are, in particular, compared to SkyDrive, this is looking quite expensive. Now, I think for free storage, you get 5 gigabytes with Google Drive, but you can upgrade that for $2.49 a month to 25 gigabytes. It's going to be interesting to see what this does for them, and I'm not even sure how that's going to. Some of us, for example, are already paying Google for online apps and indeed some storage with Google Docs and things like that as well, so I'm not sure how that translates into something for them.
I'm a fan of Google. I hope they do well with it. I mean, I love Apple as well, but I love the Gmail application. It definitely is great for my business. I mean, I can run 5 different email addresses off the same account, so I'm a Gmail fan and I'm a Google fan, obviously, so I hope they do well with it. And it's something I'll definitely give a try when it's needed.
I think it's going to be something that's going to roll out slowly over a period of time or something. And, you know, gradually it'll be enabled for individual users. We'll start to hear more about it. But it was an announcement this week. Another Google-related announcement this week that I thought was interesting. Larry and Sergey are involved with none other than James Cameron, that we've talked about recently as well. And they're going mining for asteroids. They're going mining asteroids for precious metals, Michaela. Did you hear that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, what Adrian Weckler was talking to Vint Cerf yesterday up in Dublin.
Oh, yeah?
And Vint was talking to him about space travel. So, you know, why not? It's interesting to see, you know, these multimillionaires or multi-billionaires even going off and doing kind of cool and funky things with their money. You know, it's good. It's interesting. I mean, we've discussed this in the past with, you know, the James Cameron diving thing, and what was it? Jeff Bezos was off doing something as well. And I think it's interesting. I mean,
it is, yeah.
You know, what comes out the far end of any of this? God only knows. But
it's exciting though. These people, I suppose, who've built their reputations on innovation. You know, they're not going to invest in ordinary type of things. They want to do something cool, which I think is interesting as well. It remains to be seen whether this is going to be cost effective or not. But they are talking about having some kind of space based station up and running by 2020. Some kind of processing station or docking station for these robotic vehicles that they're going to send off to mine asteroids and that. What do you think of it, Patrick?
Are they working with, what is the guy's name, Richard Branson from Virgin?
I wonder. I'm trying to see who else is involved. James Cameron is involved as well, of course, fresh from his recent voyage to the bottom of the sea. But it's very, very interesting indeed what's actually going to come out of this. Vint Cerf was in Ireland, was he, Michele, for something?
He gave a talk yesterday evening in Google Ireland HQ.
Okay.
He was around this morning because somebody else I know was having breakfast with him.
Right.
But I don't know how long he's staying in the country, whether it was just a flying visit or if he's staying around for a few days.
Read about it in the Sunday Business Post this weekend, I suppose, if Adrian got an interview with him. But it is Vint is working, if I recall, on some kind of planetary internet. Isn't that right? There's some kind of protocol for, what is it? TCP/IP for interplanetary internet protocol or something like that. Do you recall hearing about that, Michele?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some rumors about this. I mean, yeah. You know, Vint Cerf was himself and a bunch of other guys were the ones behind TCP/IP,
That's
IPv4,
right.
Which was, you know, the IP address space that we know and love. And then they also came up with IPv6 when they realized that IPv4 was going to run out.
Yeah.
And I've seen Vint speaking at ICANN meetings in the past. He was chairman of the board of ICANN for a long time. And you know, he's a fascinating and engaging speaker, an absolutely brilliant man. He's got some job title with Google that basically allows him to do anything he likes, from what I can gather. He can go off and push the boundaries as much as he wants. What is this exactly? Chief Internet Evangelist. That's his job title. That says everything and nothing.
That's a cool.
I want that title.
That's a cool job title. A bit like Chef Patrick.
Well, I think Patrick is kind of chief. I don't know. What would you see yourself as being if you were an evangelist? Because you can't be the Internet Evangelist. That's already taken. What would you be evangelist for?
Janitors. Janitorial. I want to create the technology for new brooms and mops and sweepers and yeah.
Patrick, I'm going to talk to you later a little bit more about sciencefiction.com, but I just want to say at this point, it's very cool, I have to say. Very impressive what's going on that site. Very busy site indeed. And, of course, a cool domain. You got to wonder, though, when you look at what people like, as I say, what Vint Cerf is working on, what the Google boys and James Cameron are talking about. Science fiction is becoming more like science reality all the time, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I, in fact, I should check to see if sciencereality.com is available to register, huh?
You shouldn't have said that while I'm on the call. This seems faster to register it.
You guys get on with that, and we'll just briefly look at some of the other stories on the news this week. Just want to refer to another one. Facebook launches 18 new timeline apps and outlines traffic boost for sites. I'm reading from Silicon Republic here, actually.
Awesome. More stuff to confuse me with.
Right. Are you using Timeline, Patrick?
You know, I did just so I can have that cool picture at the top, but I prefer the old layout myself.
Do you? You had your misgivings originally, Michele, didn't you? But I think you've kind of settled down to it now.
Sort of, yes and no. I mean, for my personal one, I'm happy with it. It's great. I've no problem with it. For a business page, there's a few things around the timeline that really, really bug me, because we used to allow people to post things onto their company's Facebook wall if they had a query or whatever, and then we were able to address those quickly, or other users could even answer them. But with the Facebook timeline, they're almost hidden completely. And you don't have the tabs as well, so you can't send traffic easily to a tab. I mean, you can do it, but it's a bit of a clog, you know, it's a bit of a nasty hack.
Well, what about the design aspect of it, Michele? Because I know you have James, who's a professional designer, working on this kind of stuff for Black Knight. That helps, really, doesn't it? It certainly does help if you have someone professional to say put your cover image in or something like that, or design something appropriate for that.
Of course, I mean, you know, I see some of the stuff that other people are doing, and I just die a little inside when I see how, you know, how little time or little effort they put into things. But I mean, look, I was doing a blog post, which I still haven't got around to finishing, for one of my blogs. I was looking at some of the cooler images people were using, you know, for the big image at the top of their Facebook page, and some of the images are absolutely brilliant. They're very, very clever. They're using the space properly. And they've done something which is really, really catchy, whereas other ones, it looks like a dog's dinner. I mean, it's nothing against dogs or their dinner, but you know what I mean. It looks like something that was thrown together in about 15 to 20 seconds without any thought, no consideration for anything, no thought for building a brand. And it's like, you know, branding is everything.
And it's,
well, let me ask you a question about the image, because for me, when I go to either a personal page or a business page, it cuts the top, I'd say, 20% of the image off for me, and I actually have to scroll back up in order to see it.
Yeah, there's a few things there that, you know, you have the amount of space you're allowed to, you can use for the cover image, and mm-hmm. then the avatar type thing eats into that image. So when you're designing your cover image, you have to take into consideration how all those elements are going to fit together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm looking at the sciencefiction.com one, and it looks fine. But I've seen other ones where people have put text down the bottom left, and of course it's been eaten up by their actual brand logo thing. It's
extremely simple. We just, you know, kept it simple. I'm not trying to overcomplicate it. You know, that's actually the main image there is what we use as our background for the website. So I just wanted to have the consistency. So when you go to one and the other, it kind of, you get the same feel at least.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's very, very important. I mean, like, I'm looking at ours at the moment for some stupid reason. It looks like the alignment has changed again. Now, it was aligned properly the other day, or maybe it's just my browser being odd. But, you know, you have a certain amount of space that you can use, and how you use it, you know, it's up to yourself. But you have to bear in mind there's the other elements on the page. And, like, the avatar type thing, if you make that too big or too small, it's going to screw up the cover image bit. And, you know, for our readers, maybe we can find a couple of links. I think James actually posted a couple of things on our blog about the Facebook timeline that can be quite helpful for people, because I'm still seeing people whose Facebook pages are still using non-HTTPS URLs. They're using apps that are completely broken. They're sending people, they're paying for ads on Facebook to send them to tabs that don't exist anymore. I mean, you know, they're spending money. They might as well burn it. I mean, you know, make a little pile of money in the center of the floor and throw a match into it. It would be as much use to them as what they're doing. But yeah, your one works very well. I mean, I like our one, of course, and I am slightly biased. And there's a couple of other ones I've seen. The Grammarly one had been stitches last night. And I think it was one of the breweries had quite a funny one. I'll have to dig out those images. But some of them, they're very good. They're very clever.
And it's interesting that Google has come right in really with a similar design now for Google Plus. You got to have a cover image there as well. It's all making work for us, really, unless we have professional designers involved. That's more of the burden of technology, Patrick, isn't it?
Of course, but you know what? It's part of the brand, and we want to have a good first appearance. Sometimes the first time they're going to see us is Facebook or Twitter or whatever it is, and we've got to make it look as good as possible so they stick around.
I'm going to find out more about your business, Patrick, in just a minute. But first of all, let's take a break and ask Michele to tell us what they're doing special offer-wise this week for Black Knight. You're still hiring, Michele?
We're still hiring. So if anybody's interested who's in the world of, you know, software engineering, software development, and wants a job working for us and is happy with open source technologies, then they should talk to us. In terms of special offers and everything else, we're still pushing the 30-day free trial on the GoMobi website builder. And since cloud hosting is all a buzz again this week because of that image doing the rounds of the clouds in the shape of Ireland, you can get a special discount on our cloud hosting for if you sign up for 12 months by using the coupon code CLOUDYEAR.
What's this about an image of a cloud in the shape of Ireland, Michele?
Somebody shared it on Facebook earlier this morning, and it's gone viral since then. It's a photograph of a cloud formation that looks like the island of Ireland. Now, it could be a Photoshop job. It probably is a Photoshop job, but it's being shared by, it started, I don't know where, and it's being shared by, you know, hundreds and if not thousands of Irish users of Facebook at the moment.
Cool. Could be a marketing campaign on the part of IDA or Enterprise Ireland or some state organisation like that. You'd never know, but that's cool. Promoting the cloud for Ireland. That's great. You can find out more about Black Knight's special offers and, of course, their recruitment campaign at blackknight.com.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
You're listening to Technology.ie with Conor Muinichon and Michele Nealon. Our guest this week is Patrick Rudell from Florida. Hi, Patrick.
Hello, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Patrick. Chef Patrick, as you're described, and you were saying it's because you started a blog all about the world of domains and domaining and domainers. Am I using the right terminology there?
Sure, sounds good to me. You call it whatever you want.
What's a domainer?
A domainer is someone, and this is my definition. Everyone has a different one, but for me, a domainer is someone that buys domain names as an investment purpose, like stocks, with the pure purpose of wanting to purchase and sell them.
Hmm. So at a higher value, obviously.
Oh, correct, at a higher value. Yeah, you don't want to sell at a loss, but unless you're into the charity business, but... you know, the business has evolved. You know, domainers now, they are developers. They're, you know, trying to drive traffic different ways. They're trying to monetize different ways. But for me, you know, the true definition of a domainer and something I've always tried to stick to is you buy a domain name for X amount of dollars and you try to double, triple, quadruple, whatever you do, make it, you know, make a profit and sell the domain.
And how did you get into it, Patrick?
Well, I was in physical real estate from 2005 to 2008. The market started to take a turn and we decided to sell our company. You know, at the time, you know, I'm all about brand building and I built a very large brand in Tampa Bay, Florida, where I got a nice size offer to buy the company. We sold it and, you know, I bought probably $20,000 worth of pretty bad domain names when I sold my company.
So you, how did you buy them? How did you source them? Did you buy them in a bundle? Did you register them one at a time? Or
I registered them one at a time. I went to some of the forums. There's namepros.com and dnforum.com. Those are the two primary ones in the community. And I'd go there and I'd read all the hype of all these other newbies that, you know, quite honestly didn't know any better than me. But because I know any better, I looked there for their expertise and knowledge, and I started buying a lot of domain names off there. I mean, you know, hundreds and thousands. I bought somewhere between 3,000 to 5,000 domain names my first 90 days in the business. And not knowing what you're doing and just buying things is like, you know, throwing darts at a dartboard. You're hoping you're going to hit something.
And what kind of criteria did you use for choosing these names?
Well, that's the problem. I had no criteria. I would just buy whatever I thought was cool.
Have you refined that strategy since, or is that still the way you work?
No, I have definitely refined that. In fact, you know, somewhere between those 3,000 to 5,000, I think I'm actually down to about 200 domain names now. Domain names where I'm not necessarily in the business anymore of just buying and selling for a quick flip. If I can see a business purpose for a domain name, then I'll hold on to it for years. Whether someone wants to buy it or not, you know, I can see a purpose, something that I can personally do with it. I see that as a safer investment for myself because it will get used eventually, as compared to buying a couple thousand domain names and hoping that some of them get sold.
It's interesting when you say your background is in real estate, Patrick, because obviously, you know, when you're buying real estate, property values are you know, they can be low, but they don't go as cheap as domains do. But domains, while it may be cheap to register one, relatively speaking, initially, you know, if you hit the right one, if for some reason or another a domain increases in value, it can be worth more than a house.
Oh, definitely. I mean, don't get me wrong, I've bought houses for $6,000 and I've obviously bought a domain name sciencefiction.com for $175,000. So it does go both ways, but the basic concept of a domain name, sure, if you can pick one up for $8, $10 and sell it for a few hundred, a few thousand, or even tens of thousands of dollars, which I've heard cases of, but they're so rare and far and few between. So you know, you really have to know what you're doing. This business is not for anyone like myself. 3-4 years ago when I got into it, I wasn't the right person at the time to be doing what I was doing. I had a lot of learning to do. I mean, since then, I've gone to maybe 20 domain industry shows, events, talked to some of the top people in this business, picked their brains. So my education came in buying bad domain names and spending a lot of money doing so.
How did that particular one come about, sciencefiction.com?
It was actually for a client of mine. A client of mine that I was brokering a domain name bought fiction.com. He owns a book publishing company. And he came to me later and said, you know, I'm interested in sciencefiction.com. And I went to seek out the domain name for him. And we did a little negotiating on his behalf, but the price point for him just wasn't where he wanted it to be. It was probably double what he wanted to pay. And I just seen a huge opportunity in it. And I fell in love with it at that point as I was negotiating for him. But so there was no conflict of interest. I waited a good 60, 90 days before I even reapproached the seller. But you know, I did take that opportunity. I reapproached the seller and I worked out, you know, what I believe a fair deal for both parties. I think the domain name's worth more than what I paid for it, which, you know, is the goal for an investor. And then I think we've added even more value now that we're getting, this month we'll hit over 500,000 visits to the site.
That's interesting, so, because it's packed with content. I mean, you've really developed. Well, I don't know how much you've developed the site. What was it? How was it being used when you bought it?
So before it was just a domain name. Just okay. There was no website. There was no nothing. Prior to, they used it for like an Amazon storefront, affiliate codes, but it wasn't driving any traffic. So when we took it over, we really weren't getting any traffic. We're adding anywhere from 10 to 13, 14 articles per day. I think we're up somewhere around 3,800 total articles in the last 16 months.
It's hard to avoid the real estate analogy, Patrick, because you buy a house, as you say, for $6,000, you fix it up, and you can sell it for much more. You're developing property. In this case, you're not just trading domains; you are developing and improving the value of this particular domain, sciencefiction.com.
No, I agree. It's just like a house; it's construction. You know, you're building it up. You're building the website. You're building the traffic, the eyes to the site. And then the goal is to, sell it for more money. But I don't even know if we have time for this conversation. But one of the things I want to debunk is the people keep referring domain names as real estate. And, I've come to the realization after 4 years in this business and 4 years in real estate that the similarities are there, but they're so different. Prime examples are values. You go into a neighborhood and you know what the houses are worth. You don't know the same thing with a domain name. Every domain name is unique. Financing. I mean, you can't really finance a domain name. It's not as easy. There's maybe one or two primary companies out there that require a huge down payment. They, they require good credit. With a house, at least here in the United States, if you have a job and mediocre credit, you get a house. Mm. Everybody needs a place to live, but not everybody needs a domain name. So I really think there's some similarities, the land and saying, you can build it out and develop it. But I think it ends there. And this is something I plan on writing about and in more detail, but I really disagree with these analogies. And it took me 7-8 years, honestly being an expert in both fields to realize that.
Well, I'm going to stretch the analogy a little bit further. What about the neighborhood or the location? I'm talking about the top-level domain. Does that matter, or do you have any thoughts on that?
So like a .nyc or a ....
and the fact that it's all opening up now with a whole load of new generic top-level domains, obviously, that we're going to hear about very shortly.
I mean, not at all. I mean, I think the country code that we live in will always be the primary destination. So for the United States, which it should be .us, but it will always be .com because that's what was launched to begin with. Mm. What does Michele use in Ireland? I'm assuming .ie, correct?
Well, yeah, .ie would be the Irish one. But I mean, the problem here is a bit like with .us, the rules and restrictions are such that a lot of Irish websites were set up under .com.
Okay.
I mean, it is kind of balancing out more now, sure. But
I think Canada's going through the same thing. They switched to .ca later down the road, and now they're actually more than 50% is switching to .ca. I mean, you've got Germany that's solely using .de, and you see how large that extension is there. But these new TLDs like .movie, .music, they're going to be catchy, and they're going to do okay. I think... If they would have worked, we would have seen those examples with a .fm for the radio and a .am. .movie, sure, the movie companies will be able to get their movie title domains. And if used properly for music and movies, those might work. But I don't see them threatening, a .com or a .de in any way whatsoever. It will definitely not hurt our values.
We asked, Michele asked readers of technology.ie and followers of his on Twitter as well if they had any questions for you. And this one came from a Twitter user called CCTLDDK. And that was exactly the question they asked. Did you think that the new GTLDs would have any impact in particular on your investment in sciencefiction.com?
I think it's only going to increase my value. No matter what, everybody types in .com. I mean, that's why .com is so valuable. It's the same analogy with the toll-free number. In the United States, you have 800 numbers. It goes down to 888-877-866-855. And as you go down that list, the same with the .com, .net, .org, .us, each one will get less and less type-in traffic. So even if I used a .net, chances are someone's going to type in sciencefiction.com or toll-free numbers. If I have an 888 number, chances are people are going to type in 800 because that's what's been around for so long. That's what people are used to typing in. And the marketing amount of money that would have to be pushed behind using a .net or a secondary toll-free number, it just outweighs the cost of what you should just spend to buy the premium domain or toll-free number to begin with.
What makes a good domain name, Patrick?
Short. I mean, it's got to be short. You know, dictionary terms are always well. I mean, that's what's going to do well in Google, is if it's a keyword domain name. So, and I'll just use my case is science fiction, and it's exactly what it is. And we rank very well in Google for a lot of different terms. I mean, I'd say a good chunk of our traffic is from Google. But, you know, catchy domain names, they're great. But you've got to develop a catchy name and you've got to deliver traffic in order for that domain name to be valuable. So you'll always have a value in a short 1 to 2 word keyword generic domain name.
And are all the good ones gone?
Yes, they are. I actually, if I acquire domain names now, it's through a drop service, you know, either a namejet.com or a snapnames.com. I want to find domain names that people forgot to renew. And there are some good ones out there still, 1 to 2, maybe even a stretch, a 3-word keyword generic domain name that that is available. And it does go into a pending delete status. And then, you know, if multiple people want that domain name, it will go to an auction. But you're going to, you're not going to get a $100,000 domain name for $8. Not never again. I can't see that. I don't think it's possible.
So again, you mentioned specifically that you did acquire sciencefiction.com for $175,000. You had no misgivings about it?
What do you mean?
You didn't think twice about it when you paid for it. You felt it was worth it.
Oh, I broke a sweat. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a very large investment. I could buy a lot of houses for $175,000. But yeah, I didn't. You know, I knew that this would be the premium brand in my community. It's going to take time. I mean, it's not from day one. You're going to get, you know, a couple million visits. But we're building. It's a slow process. And I think we have the cool factor. I think that when I pick up the phone and I call a Comic-Con or I call a T-shirt company or a movie company, they know exactly what we do, and we have, you know, that instant credibility that we need to be a player in this industry.
So how are you running it? I mean, your expertise is in domains. Are you managing this site yourself, or are you paying someone to do that? Are you paying people to write for it? How do you actually manage and run this site, Patrick?
Sure. So just one step back. I think my expertise is in business. I am an entrepreneur. I have started and failed and succeeded with, you know, dozens of businesses. So, you know, domaining and real estate, you know, I kind of put those two together, you know, whether it's physical or virtual. But, you know, being in the real estate business, I know what it takes to develop. I know what it takes to fix a house. I know what it takes to fix a website. I run this site solely. I am personally involved in every piece of content that gets put on this website. We have somewhere between 15 and 20 writers. We have some good writers and you know, there's turnover with writers. But we have people that work from home, so I will personally look through the news feeds. I'll be in contact with the studios, you know, press releases, and I'll send those out to my writers. They'll write the story, and then the primary editor on the site is actually my wife. She does a great job editing the content and getting it up. You know, I'll assist with maybe a title or changing an image or the schedule of it, but she'll do all of the major editing work and make sure it gets posted to the site.
That's a lot of work, Patrick. It's got to be taking up most of your time.
It does. I'll tell you, it takes more of my wife's time now. But, you know, it's fun, though. I do enjoy this. Do we make money from the website? No, not at all. We're still losing thousands of dollars every month on it. but there is a huge upside, or I wouldn't be investing this time and money into it, and neither would my partner.
And that's what it is. It's an investment, as you say, and you're building up the value of it, hopefully from the result of your work. Michaela, you're into domains as well, but would you describe yourself as a professional domainer like Patrick, or is it more of a hobby?
I'm somewhere in the middle. Compared to kind of average internet users, I'm probably considered to be a domainer. Compared to real domainers, I'm considered to be an amateur. So, I'm somewhere in the middle. I mean, I have a lot of keyword generics, but mainly in ccTLDs. I wouldn't have as much in gtLDs. So in .com and .net and things like that, I wouldn't have much of great value. Whereas in, say, even under COUK, I have some very, very nice names.
Sell yourself short. You are definitely an expert. I mean, you have attended many events. You know the right people, and you definitely know what you're doing in this business. I mean, you're doing all the right things. So
yeah, but it's not a license to print money. It's clear from what both of you are saying, Patrick. You know, you've got to work for this. And Michaela, you've already got a job.
Well, this is it. I mean, for me, I'm interested by the entire thing. I'm intrigued by it,
yeah.
And I'm connected with pretty much any reasonable sized domain investor. I know most of them, and I know all the key characters. And I
let me ask you a question, Kaylee. There's two ways to several ways to be in the business. One of them is to be a domainer buying and selling, and then there's a service provider. And yourself being a service provider, domainers need you, right? They need to get
They don't. I mean, the problem you see, of course, is for a lot of domainers is they want two things that aren't exactly compatible, unfortunately, for a lot of them. I mean, if they're doing large volumes, the ones who have only a small volume of names appreciate the impossibility of the request. Like, you cannot have the best service in the world, high levels of security, and all of those kind of things if you're selling .com domain names for $5 a year.
Sure.
It's impossible. You can't do it. And sure, domains have become quite commoditized at one level, but there's a big difference between taking, say, an Irish example of, say, let's say John Joe Murphy and Sons Limited.com, which is a horrible, horrible domain name. Apologies if the person who owns that domain is listening.
Hang on, I'm just going to register it
between,
here. Yeah,
between John Joe Murphy's and Sons.com, and it probably exists, and say sciencefiction.com, or I don't know, even say technology.ie versus John Joe Murphy and Sons.ie. They're two totally different domain names. Like, I would see technology.ie as being a keyword. It's a keyword, it's a domain, which if you could sell .ie, domain names would have a value. You can't sell them, so it has no value. If I was charging people, say, €6 or €7 every single year all the time for a .com, it's impossible. You have to be able to get that balance right. But I mean, ultimately, I like what some people do. I mean, the reason I wanted to talk to you was because I thought the sciencefiction.com concept of actually building it out and doing something with it was really, really cool. Yeah. And I'm a science fiction fan as well, so it fits in nicely.
You are, and I've noticed you commenting on things, and we certainly appreciate you coming to the site. And this is where I personally am starting to shift. So as the real estate market is picking back up, I'm seeing an opportunity to get back into physical real estate. Actually, within this last week, I just signed a lease, and I'm doing the build-out process of a physical office in Tampa, Florida, so I can get back into physical real estate, something that I miss and love. And I love the opportunity to build businesses. And sciencefiction.com itself is a domain name, but it has now evolved into a true business that, we do sell advertising, we do have employees. And it's not a small staff. Like I said, we have 15 to 20 writers. We have myself. We have an editor. We have a partner. We have an assistant editor. We have a marketing guy. So it's definitely evolved into a business. And this business does take away from my so-called domaining time.
Michaela, is there an Irish domainer scene, or is that stretching things a little bit? You mentioned, for example, you can't sell a .ie domain. But are there others like yourself? Would you say
is there a
community?
There are. Oh, there are. I mean, there's a handful of Irish domainers. Mm. when there was when the traffic conference rotated through a number of locations in Europe a couple of years ago and ended up in Dublin. And there were a few Irish people who turned up at that. And don't forget, Afilius, which is the company that runs .mobi and runs the back end for several other things, including .info and .me, their offices are based in Dublin. There are quite a few people kind of dabbling around there. I mean, there wouldn't be anybody really high profile compared to, you know, some of the big names you'd see primarily in the US. Oh, but there are people there that just, they keep their heads down, and a lot of them, they're doing stuff. You'll find them on the Domainer-specific forums. You won't find them knocking around on, say, boards.ie, or if you do, it won't be talking about domain names. It'll be talking about something completely unrelated.
I want to go back to the blog on technology.ie when you asked people to leave comments and for questions they'd like to see asked of Patrick. And Patrick Gregor Mango left a question. In fact, he left a whole stack of questions in relation to science fiction. We were debating this earlier on. Turns out, first of all, Patrick, you don't consider yourself an expert on science fiction.
No, I don't by any means, and I did see some of those questions, and if asked those questions and I answer inappropriately, I might be banished by the sci-fi community. I'm a little scared.
So he's asked a whole load of questions, which are.
Gregor might be listening to this, and I know Gregor personally. He's a friend.
Oh, do
of mine.
You? Yeah.
No,
he's made a good point, and he says science fiction and modern technology have never been so close. Sci-fi authors are striving to get new ideas for interesting settings, but in the majority of cases, they take shortcuts through retro mashups. Why is that? He wants to know. He refers to something called the Asimov-Clarke Treaty. Two great science fiction writers. I didn't know there was something called the Asimov-Clarke Treaty. There's probably all kinds of science fiction experts out there who are shaking their heads in sorrow and shedding tears at our lack of familiarity with the subject. Gregor, if you would, if you want to write back and clarify some of these questions, I'm fascinated to know what the Asimov-Clarke Treaty is.
Well, maybe we should get Gregor on as a guest on time and he can explain it to us.
There's a thought, indeed. We certainly will, and we want to say thanks to Patrick for coming on the technology.ie podcast as well with us. Patrick, enjoy the sunshine in Florida. Michele, stay out of the rain in Carlow. And from myself in County Clare, I'll talk to you next week. Thanks again, Patrick.
And thanks, Patrick.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.